And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget, you can take the show with you 24/7 by checking out the Nick Craig Show podcast in your favorite podcast app. But also encourage you to give the star, give the podcast a 5-star rating or a review on whatever app you're listening to. That goes a long way as the show grows and we get into all the algorithms. It is greatly appreciated. You can also listen online at the website, nickcraig.com. Want to thank the Law Group here in Wilmington for their support of the program this morning. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. We start with a jam-packed Friday edition. What I had was working on yesterday afternoon, and we were prepared and set up to do a full show this morning on the new Hanover County budget, which was approved yesterday. I've got dozens of clips from a very contentious, lengthy meeting that took place in New Hanover County yesterday. I'll just mention this. The commissioners did officially approve a budget, 30.6 cents. That is significantly lower than the initial discussions of 36 cents. 38 cents was thrown around at some point this past budget, thanks to the great work of Commissioners Dane Scalise, Vice Chair Leanne Pierce, and the chairman of the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners, Bill Rivenbark, were able to get this passed yesterday. It will mean savings of hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars for residents across New Hanover County. I want to give this process its due time. We'll jump into those details, fingers crossed at this point, unless things continue to unfold Monday morning, because we have got a lot of very important news to bring to you this Friday morning. And we, of course, start in the Middle East, where around 7 o'clock Eastern last night, 3 a.m. Over in Israel, we learned details from the Israeli Prime Minister and Benjamin Netanyahu that has officially confirmed that Israel has begun the process of striking strategic targets in the country of Iran, the world's largest state sponsor of terror. The Prime Minister did release a statement on his social media accounts last night. This is what the Prime Minister had to say and how he laid everything out.
Moments ago, Israel launched Operation Rising Lion, a targeted military operation to roll back the Iranian threat to Israel's very survival. This operation will continue for as many days as it takes to remove this threat. For decades, the tyrants of Tehran have brazenly, openly called for Israel's destruction. They've backed up their genocidal rhetoric with a program to develop nuclear weapons. In recent years, Iran has produced enough highly enriched uranium for 9 atom bombs, 9. In recent months, Iran has taken steps that it has never taken before, steps to weaponize this enriched uranium. And if not stopped, Iran could produce a nuclear weapon in a very short time. It could be a year, it could be within a few months, less than a year. This is a clear and present danger to Israel's very survival.
I'm going to pause the Prime Minister there. The comments, of course, he is obviously focusing his commentary on the survival of Israel, which is his prerogative to do so. He, of course, is the Prime Minister of that country, right? You'd expect nothing less from the leader of your country. But this is a global, worldwide risk. Now, I am very thankful that this is being done by Israel and the United States is not involved. We'll get into those details as we continue with the show this morning. But when you look at what's gone on in Iran over the last really 25 years or so, 30 years even in some cases, the idea that Iran is able to enrich uranium to the point where they are able to generate an atom bomb, they're able to get the uranium in its purest enough form where they're able to arm a nuclear warhead or other sorts of munitions with enriched uranium that would be equivalent to that of some sort of nuclear bomb. That is a huge global worldwide problem. Iran is not the good guys. Tehran is not the good guys. The Ayatollah, they are not the good guys in any of this equation at all. I mean, you look at what goes on with Iran. You've heard me say before, and you've heard it said about the largest state sponsor of terror. You look at Hamas. They were funding Hamas. They continue to fund Hamas in you know, that, of course, came to light a lot back in October of 2023 with the attack on Israel. You look at Hezbollah, almost exclusively funded by the Iranian government, backed by Tehran. You've got the Shiite militants in Iraq, also, again, insurgent groups backed by Iran to commit acts of terrorism. And it just goes on and on and on. This is not anything new, and there is a growing risk, a growing threat to Iran's ability to enrich uranium, as they have continued to prove that they are interested in seemingly just one thing, which is terror. I mean, it's an illegitimate government that exists in that country. It was a government that was taken over by force at the barrel of a gun. And since that period of time, it is an incredibly oppressive regime. It is a regime that is interested in nothing more than death and destruction of the free world. It's out of control. And so you've got the Israeli prime minister and the IDF conducting these strike raids last night on very strategic targets in Iran. And it's unfortunate that it had to get to this point, but that country is unwilling to negotiate. Iran is unwilling to come to any sort of table. You had this nuclear advisory committee yesterday sanction Iran over their continued attempts to enrich uranium. It's a disaster of a situation. And obviously, while it's a closer threat to the folks in Israel and individuals around the Middle East, if the point comes forward, and you just heard there from Benjamin Netanyahu, if the point comes forward where Iran is able to enrich uranium to the point where they're able to strap it onto a nuclear warhead, that's a significant problem for the entire globe. It no longer becomes just a problem of the Middle East. So that is where we stand this morning. We'll hear some more commentary from the Israeli Prime Minister.
80 years ago, the Jewish people were the victims of a Holocaust perpetrated by the Nazi regime. Today, the Jewish state refuses to be a victim of a nuclear Holocaust perpetrated by the Iranian regime. Now, as Prime Minister, I've made it clear time and again, Israel will never allow those who call for our annihilation to develop the means to achieve that goal. Tonight, Israel backs those words with action. We struck at the heart of Iran's nuclear enrichment program. We struck at the heart of Iran's nuclear weaponization program. We targeted Iran's main enrichment facility in Natanz. We targeted Iran's leading nuclear scientists working on the Iranian bomb. We also struck at the heart of Iran's ballistic missile program. Last year, Iran fired 300 ballistic missiles at Israel. Each of these missiles carries a ton of explosives and threatens the lives of hundreds of people. Soon, those missiles could carry a nuclear payload, threatening the lives not of hundreds, but of millions. Iran is gearing up to produce 10,000 of those ballistic missiles within 3 years. Now, just imagine. Imagine 10,000 tons of TNT landing on a country the size of New Jersey. This is an intolerable threat. It too must be stopped. Iran is now working on what it calls the new plan to destroy Israel. You see, the old plan failed. Iran and its proxies try to encircle Israel with a ring of fire and to attack us with the horrible attack of October 7th. But the people of Israel, the soldiers of Israel, rose like lions to defend our country. We crushed Hamas, we devastated Hezbollah, we hit Iranian proxies in Syria and Yemen. And when Iran directly attacked us twice last year, we struck back inside Iran itself. Yet in defending ourselves, we also defend others. We defend our Arab neighbors. They too have suffered from Iran's campaign of chaos and carnage.
I'm going to stop the commentary there. It just gets into just some Israeli, what I'll call propaganda, which is fine. I mean, again, we're talking about the Prime Minister of Israel, so you would expect nothing of the less, right? I mean, you would expect American propaganda from the U.S. president. You would expect Israeli propaganda from the Prime Minister there. But the point that he's making is one that should not be understated. And it's the concept that if allowed unchecked, which unfortunately is what the last administration allowed when they essentially turned over hundreds of millions of dollars to Iran, is an unchecked Iran makes the entire world very unstable. It puts every single person in what I'll call pretty significant danger. Now, is the how immediate is the threat? That remains unseen. There's been discussions. You go back to the 90s when there was discussions that Iran was just a couple of years away from enriching uranium to the point in which they were able to put it into some sort of nuclear warhead on a ballistic missile and launch it off. So there's been a lot of very interesting discussion over the last 20 or 30 years as it relates to some of the nuclear programs that continue to take place in, again, the world's largest state sponsor of terror, which is an undeniable statement. Iran is not the good guys. So getting into some of the details, the Natanz nuclear facility, which is one of Tehran's key nuclear sites and which has been flagged by security experts that in coordination with other enrichment facilities could produce enough weapons-grade uranium to produce 11 nuclear weapons within the matter of months. That has been one of the main targets in the strike. However, as of this morning, the damage is kind of remaining unknown. This is still a very, very fluid situation. The nuclear facility was at least partially destroyed in 2020 following an explosion, and satellite imagery has suggested that Iran began constructing a deep underground tunnel system to further secure and obscure their nuclear program. Reported the Institute for Science and International Security earlier this year. There's some commentary coming in on our Rumble chat this morning. Haven't had time to research, but hasn't Israel already taken out part of Iran's nuclear weapons programs? Yeah, back in 2020, there were some strategic strikes. However, they have done, of course, to their best effort to try and get those facilities underground out of the way where they're not as easily barraged by missiles like a freestanding facility. So that is the detail on the strike. According to details this morning, it is unclear if any of the underground structures were hit in those Thursday night strikes. Thursday night here in the United States, Friday morning, very early over in portions of the Middle East. Reporting by the New York Times also claimed that the Percharan military complex has been hit in the overnight strikes. Those details are not immediately, again, confirmable this morning. That information still continues to be rather sparse. We did get some immediate reaction here in the United States. Secretary of State Marco Rubio releasing the following statement around 8 o'clock last night, quote, "Tonight, Israel took unilateral action against Iran. We are not involved in strikes against Iran, and our top priority is protecting American forces in the region. Israel advised us that they believed this action was necessary for its self-defense. President Trump and the administration have taken all necessary steps to protect our forces and remain in close contact with our regional partners. Let me be clear. Iran should not target U.S. interests or U.S. personnel." So that is the commentary there from Secretary of State Marco Rubio. And you can imagine and you would hope that the Iranian leadership there would be smart enough to know that if there is even the slightest attempt to go after U.S. forces stationed throughout the Middle East, there's, I think, the numbers seem to be kind of all over the place, but somewhere between 10 and 40,000 active duty service members spread out throughout portions of the Middle East. If there is a situation that unfolds there, it will be the worst decision Iran ever made. Joe Biden is not in the Oval Office. We do not have a weak, feckless, useless leader sitting in the White House this morning. We have got an incredibly strong and decisive individual who, of course, is President Donald Trump, who, just as we were coming on the air, has released additional commentary and statements as it relates. This is the president posting on Truth Social just around 6 o'clock this morning. He writes, quote, "I gave Iran chance after chance to make a deal. I told them in the strongest of words to just do it. But no matter how hard they tried, no matter how close they got, they just couldn't get it done. I told them it would be much worse than anything they know, anticipated, or were told, and that the United States makes the best and most lethal military equipment anywhere in the world by far, and that Israel has a lot of it with much more to come, and they know how to use it. Certain Iranian hardliners spoke bravely, but they didn't, smoke bravely, but they didn't know what was about to happen. They are all dead now, and it will only get worse. There has already been great death and destruction, but there is still time to make this slaughter with the next already planned attacks being even more brutal come to an end. Iran must make a deal before there is nothing left and save what was once known as the Iranian Empire. No more death, no more destruction. Just do it before it's too late. God bless you all. So some very interesting commentary coming in just over an hour ago from President Donald Trump, who even with these attacks taking place in Iran over the nighttime hours here in the United States, early morning hours there, continues to try and push for a deal. I mean, he continues to try and plead with the Iranian leadership to come back to the negotiating table and sign on. Come back to the negotiating table and make a deal. Even with everything going on, the president is continuing to urge Tehran to come to the table and make a deal. I mean, it's just, it's amazing that this is happening as we speak, literally as we are speaking live this morning. And the president is still saying there's still time to make a deal. There's still time to make something happen. And to the president's credit, I think he's right. But unfortunately, that is not likely to happen. The stubborn nature of Tehran and the leadership in Iran is not going to allow that to happen. There doesn't seem to be any sort of, they don't seem to have any interest in it. Now, these attacks, and again, the exact extent and those details are relatively unknown. There's so much information flying around, it's really hard to try and pinpoint exactly what is going on this morning. But what we know for certain is that at least that one nuclear facility was hit incredibly hard. We know that has been confirmed. There's discussion that multiple high ups in the Iranian military were also killed, strategically targeted in some of these attacks as well. That I don't know that that has necessarily been confirmed, but that's what some of those details are at least looking like this morning. So some interesting potential news to come out of that in the coming hours or days. And as you heard there from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, this is going to continue. Just kind of getting some live updates this morning. The New York Times has done a really good job at trying to make clear exactly what is going on. The Israeli military is confirming, I'm just trying to read this right now, that multiple high-level military officials in Tehran have been targeted and have been taken out by this. Hezbollah, the Iranian-backed militant group which operates in Lebanon, condemned the Israeli attacks but made no mention of any sort of military response. It has been long considered Iran's most powerful regional proxy. However, Hezbollah has been battered by a years-long conflict with Israel, and much of its arsenal of rockets have already been destroyed, taken out in previous attacks. Although analysts say that Hezbollah retains enough firepower to escalate if Iran decides to activate its allies, it does remain unclear this morning how quickly something like that may happen. There is some other, here's a couple of good maps. We'll take a look at these, looking at all of this live for the first time as this all continues to flow in this morning, showing some of the areas where these attacks took place, very strategic attacks taking place in the overnight hours. You can see the overall country of Iran in this larger map. You can see the nuclear facility there, Tehran, obviously the capital, where some of those strikes took place as well. Looking at some of the military bases and some of the other strategic facilities that were targeted in these overnight attacks. So we will continue to track at least those details. And as you heard from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, this is going to continue for days and for weeks. This is not something that is going to stop today. And we talked about this yesterday. There was a pretty strong indication that something was going to happen. Right, the reports were that U.S. service members in that area were put on alert. Some embassies were being evacuated. Family dependents of those service members were told that you can voluntarily leave the region. The some of the work set up for that. So, in all indication, this was going to happen. We didn't know how quickly. As I mentioned, it could have been as soon as tomorrow. I mentioned that yesterday. It could have been sometime over the weekend, but it did start last night, and it is likely to continue. So, let's talk about the U.S., you know, involvement and implications in all of this. You know, you looked at the comments there from Secretary of State Marco Rubio. I read through his commentary. The United States needs to stay out of this conflict. This is not the United States' battle to fight. We have seen too often, as of late, proxy wars being fought and backed by the United States all over the world. It's not beneficial to the United States. It's just not. This is a problem. Israel says that the problem is their sovereignty. They say that the issue is restricting their ability to live freely in Israel. That's fine. Then let them deal with it, which is exactly what's gone on. And I know some of the war hawks, the Lindsey Grahams of the world, the others are probably foaming at the mouth this morning. They want to, you know, get the United States involved as quickly as possible to get them involved and get the United States pulled into yet another international conflict. I hope that doesn't happen, right? We do not need another proxy war here in the United States, not physically here, but one that the United States is backing. We just don't need it. If Israel and other allies in the Middle East, you know, you look at some of the other Middle East allies that the United States has, President Trump over there just a couple of weeks ago, if they believe that Iran is the threat that it is, which I think there's strong evidence to prove that case, there's a strong case to be made that, in fact, yes, the Iranian government and some of their proxy terror groups throughout the Middle East operating in places like Syria and Lebanon, that they're a serious enough threat, then deal with it. And I know that some folks might be saying, well, you know, Nick, it's more complicated than that. No, I really don't think it is. If, you know, your neighbor is creating a problem for you, then you've got to go solve the problem. You don't call the guy that lives, 100 miles away to come over and solve the problem with your neighbor. And that's unfortunately been, you know, an ongoing issue as it relates to unstable areas in the Middle East. The United States always gets pulled into it. And I don't believe there's much appetite for that to continue. I don't believe that there's a strong appetite for the United States to get sucked in to a war between Israel and Iran. And the reality is we're already in it in some extent because we're the one that's funding all of the and providing all of the military equipment or the vast majority of it to Israel. I think Marco Rubio's response is absolutely perfect. I think the idea that this unilateral action was taken and we were not involved in the strikes, I think that's great. At least it proves to me that President Donald Trump is serious about not getting involved in some of these international conflicts, which have plagued the United States for decades. You know, he talks about and he ran a campaign on America First. Obviously, a big issue for him, right? No, I don't know that anybody is able or going to deny that. America First. America First doesn't mean Israel first. Doesn't mean Middle East first. It means America first. Now, that doesn't mean that you leave your allies high and dry. Doesn't mean that you just leave them in the dust. That's not what I'm indicating at all. But if Israel has a problem with Iran, then let Israel solve the problem with Iran. It does not necessitate U.S. involvement. It just doesn't. If other countries in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, if they've got problems with the Iranian government and their continued attempt to enrich uranium and the potential risk and threat that poses to their region, then do something about it. But it doesn't need to be the U.S., the United States of America does not need to be involved. Jay Hills is commenting in our Rumble live chat this morning. He's saying, let's see if Iran vows to hit the United States and if Israel hits them. There's no way. I would be shocked if something unfolds between the, if Iran decides to go after any U.S. Installments, any sort of military service members in the Middle East. Because I can almost promise you this, if there is a serious, if there is any attack, whether it's a successful or a failed attack on any sort of U.S. facility, U.S. military base, U.S. outpost, any place where U.S. service members are actively deployed and serving, that will be the worst decision that Iran has ever made. Donald Trump will carpet bomb the entire country. You can guarantee it. It will be the worst decision that the Iranian leadership could possibly make. You know, I'm sure you know these strikes, at least from all early accounts this morning, seem to be pretty brutal in Iran. No real argument about that. I mean, some of the videos and some of the back and forth on social media shows a pretty interesting scene unfolding. If they think this is bad, I can promise you that going after active U.S. service members in the region will be the worst decision that they could possibly make. You know, Joe Biden is no longer in the Oval Office. We no longer have weak leadership in the Oval Office. We've got a strong, decisive president that does not put up with any bullshit. I mean, just plain and simple. There's no other way to describe it. Trump is not going to put up with U.S. service members being threatened, having their security threatened, or God forbid, attacked and potentially killed by the Iranian government. It will not stand. I can promise you that. And, you know, based on his commentary this morning, that being President Donald Trump's, it seems pretty logical that he is, again, continuing to push forward with peace. Looking at some commentary, again, this is all unflowing. So this is all kind of playing out in front of our eyes this morning, so that's why everything's a little bit jumbled. Trump just telling ABC News that the Israeli attacks on Iran have, quote, been excellent and that there is a lot more to come. That coming out there from President Donald Trump right now. It looks like the IDF, an IDF spokesperson speaking right now. I don't know if this is in English or Hebrew.
The world has tried to stop the Iranian regime to stop, but it refused to do so. So we were left with no choice but to take action. The Iranian regime continues to strive to annihilate the state of Israel. We cannot allow them to do so. This morning, we have announced the targeted killing of three most senior commanders of the Iranian regime. In addition, in the joint initial strike, we also targeted Amir Ali Faji Zadeh, who is the Air Force commander of the Revolutionary Guards. Under his command, this Revolutionary Guards Air Force is responsible for many attacks against Israel and Israeli citizens. They are responsible for the launching of hundreds of drones and missiles in April and then last October.
So I guess it is being confirmed by an IDF spokesperson this morning that three high-profile military generals in the Iranian government have in fact been successfully killed by some level of these airstrikes. So that has officially been confirmed. They're saying that the chief of staff of the Iranian armed forces, the commander of the IRGC, and the commander of Iran's emergency command were, this is a direct quote, all eliminated in the Israeli strikes across Iran by more than 200 fighter jets. So that is, some pretty encouraging news, at least from the standpoint of this. You know, Trump has continued to express doubt over a nuclear deal. There's not really a whole lot of surprise there. The Iranian government is seemingly just not interested in obviously coming to the table. And another post just coming in, the Israeli officials say that operations against Iran will last for at least 2 weeks. So at least 2 weeks if Iran does not do something and probably take up Donald Trump on his offer to come back to the discussion and begin negotiating, as the president wrote in his comments, quote, just do it before it's too late. And I think that's those are some pretty pretty apparent words this morning with the situation unfolding right now. We will keep keep our eyes on those details and continue to pass them along to you as it is relevant. Again, a very fluid situation this morning, and trying to bring you the latest right here on the Nick Craig Show. Again, some pretty big news locally this morning. The New Hanover County Commissioners did approve a 30.6 cent tax budget yesterday, 30.6 cents per $100 worth of reevaluation, saving citizens across New Hanover County hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars a year. I've got a lot of thoughts, a lot of commentary, and a lot of clips on a very interesting county commission meeting that took place yesterday afternoon. Want to give that time, so we'll dive into those details. The plan is Monday morning, unless things continue to unfold. So that's the news this morning, and we'll dive into it. I've got a whole bunch of analysis and some comments from various commissioners to take place on Monday, so we'll continue to track that as well. I want to thank the law group in Wilmington for their continued support. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, they're located in downtown Wilmington and just a free phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. And if you head on over to their website, lawgroupnc.com, you can see all of their various practice areas, the things that they specialize in. You can read some details about their attorneys, and they've got a great blog that goes through a variety of legal challenges and issues. All of that available at lawgroupnc.com. We appreciate their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. Well, this weekend is set to be very interesting, as there are expected to be thousands of protests across the United States on what is being deemed No King's Day. This in retaliation to President Donald Trump's presidency. We'll get into some of those details. Plus, a United States senator tackled by Secret Service yesterday after he, you know, just peacefully tried to interrupt Kristi Noem's press conference. We'll get into some of that as well as the Nick Craig Show rolls on live on a Friday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. Yesterday afternoon, a very interesting situation unfolding in California as Secretary of State Kristi Noem, Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem was hosting a press conference in California talking about some of the ongoing efforts to get California under control after it has now been a full week of protests that have turned ever increasingly violent as individuals protest Donald Trump's immigration policies. And this is when this following situation unfolded with a Democrat California Senator Alex Padilla. Take a listen and watch this.
Hands up. I'm Senator Alex Padilla. I have questions for the secretary, because the fact of the matter is a half a dozen violent criminals that you're rotating on your... Hands off!
The left is out of control. I mean, there's just no other way to describe it. The left is out of control. You've got an acting United States senator who is at a press conference in the middle of Kristi Noem speaking and decides that he is going to try and, walk up to the podium and take over the press conference. Secret Service immediately grabs him. I don't know how much of it was Secret Service and how much of it was just general security. Immediately rushes him and gets him out of the room, as they should have. This is the problem with the left. They don't want to play by any set of ground rules. When is it appropriate to do this? I'm Alex Padilla. It's the same kind of crap that you saw Maxine Waters trying to pull over the weekend, where she's trying to demand entry into some sort of detainer facility in California, only to have the door slammed on her face. Just because you're an elected member of the United States does not give you the right to interrupt a press conference. It doesn't give you carte blanche to go into a facility without an invitation or without any sort of planning. You don't just get to show up. What do these people think? They're what? That they're God? They just show up. Oh yeah, well, I'm a U.S. senator, so I can just show up and do whatever the hell I want. I can just show up and bust up a press conference because I don't agree with the Trump administration's policies. That's a terrible look for the left. It's a joke. These are not serious people. Mike Johnson was asked about this yesterday afternoon. Obviously, Alex Padilla is a senator. However, Mike Johnson was asked about it. This was his response.
Of the House,
yes.
The constitutional officer of this branch.
Yeah, and what of it? I mean,
the idea that you said this is a Senate issue. This isn't. I mean, these are members of Congress.
But the Senate does its disciplinary actions over there, and we do ours over here. We have a certain set of measures, as you all know, and it ranges from censure to removal from committees to ultimately expulsion from the body.
And do you support that for the senator?
It's not my decision to make. I'm not in that chamber. But I do think that it merits immediate attention by their colleagues over there, and that I think that behavior at a minimum is it rises to the level of a censure. I think there needs to be a message sent by the body as a whole that that is not what we are going to do. That's not how we're going to act. We're not going to have branches fighting physically and having senators charging cabinet secretaries. We got to.
And I think the commentary there is pretty rock solid from Speaker Mike Johnson. He's in kind of a tough spot because Alex Padilla is not a member of the House. He is a member of the Senate. And, you know, I'll make the commentary. No one is above the law, right? I mean, how often did you hear this from the left for the last decade? No one is above the law. No one's above the law. No one's above the law. No one's above the law. Okay. Then you guys aren't above the law either, right? I mean, if that's what you're going to proclaim to the American people, if that's what you're going to try and use as your constant rallying cry that no one is above the law, then that's fair. No one is above the law, including members of the United States Congress who tried storming their way into a facility in New Jersey back about a month ago. No one is above the law. Alex Padilla trying to rush the stage of Kristi Noem at a press conference. No one is above the law. Regardless of whether you're a U.S. senator or not, you are going to be escorted out by security. And this clip is even better. This is Padilla being pushed to the ground and put in handcuffs by the FBI. It's a phenomenal clip.
Hands behind your back. Hands behind your back.
If you let me have, go ahead. Hands behind my back.
All right. Cool. Okay,
with
one hand. Lay flat.
Other hand, sir. Other hand.
Recording allowed out here. I did not know. No recording allowed out here for FBI, right?
No one's above the law. No one's above the law. How are they supposed to know that this guy was a U.S. senator? Great commentary coming in on our Rumble chat this morning. Padilla could have been a lunatic trying to cause harm. No one knew who he was, so security did their job. Exactly. You know, what could have been done here if Alex Padilla was a serious member of Congress? Somebody that was actually interested in having the discussion that he claims to care so much about, you would let Kristi Noem finish her comments because that's what the appropriate thing would be. You would let Kristi Noem finish her comments and then try and interject yourself in the conversation if you're serious about the issue. But the reality is, and we know this for a fact, the left is not serious about this stuff. It's all a show to them. It's all this big political game to the left. They're not serious about these issues. They weren't serious about immigration for the last four freaking years. They allowed it to go completely unchecked. They don't care about this stuff. They care about getting in front of the cameras. They care now about immigration, but they've never cared about it in the past. It hasn't been a big issue for them. So if Alex Padilla was so hell-bent on getting in on this press conference, then he could have done so, absolutely, in a much different manner. He did not have to cut off Kristi Noem in the middle of her commentary to attempt to walk towards the stage and interject himself in the discussion. He could have simply let her finish her comments and then tried to interject. And he may have been successful, he may have not been. But this wasn't his press conference. This was not an Alex Padilla scheduled press conference. This was Secretary Kristi Noem hosting an event. Not an open event for Alex Padilla or any other radical progressive lunatic to take over the stage. I mean, they have no interest in having any of these serious discussions, but they want to shout down and go after everything else. It's childish behavior. These are supposed to be, in the case of senators, there are two senators from every single state. It is a relatively small legislative body in the grand scheme of things. The level that those individuals should operate should absolutely be a higher bar than everybody else. You're a freaking United States senator. And your solution to getting your point across is storming the stage while Kristi Noem is speaking. That's how you're pushing your message and your narrative forward. Maybe in the past, but we're not putting up with this crap anymore. You guys ran the show. You did a terrible job. We're in charge now. We set the standard. If you want to disrupt events, if you want to potentially cause a security risk, you're going to be taken out by security. It's really not all that complicated. If you want to riot and loot and burn cities to the ground, you're not going to be allowed to do so anymore, regardless if a state like California is going to allow it or not. The United States is going to stop it. President Donald Trump has made it abundantly clear that he is not going to tolerate this garbage anymore. The message has been sent. There's no ambiguity. It's not a gray area. It's very clear. And I found this clip interesting as well. Stephen A. Smith commented on this on his show last night. We've played some clips from Stephen A. over the last couple of months. He's been making some very interesting points. And, you know, I think Stephen A. Smith, is a very good barometer of where things are kind of at publicly. I think he's a really good barometer of a guy that is not overtly political, a guy that does not fall into the bucket of being a Democrat or a Republican. And when you hear his thoughts on these various issues, I think it's very, very eye-opening. Here's Stephen A. Smith on this yesterday afternoon.
Here you have this senator, Alex Padilla. Can Kristi Noem speak? Could you have waited till she finished to ask your questions? To shout your questions? You are a senator, right? You couldn't wait? So that was just you out of control because you were just losing it, huh? You, a United States senator, couldn't compose yourself and let the head of Homeland Security finish her thoughts before you asked the question. Couldn't do that, huh? Couldn't do it, huh?
Couldn't do it, huh? It's a great point by Stephen A. Smith, echoing a lot of the things that I feel and a lot of things I've been saying. I mean, I think it's great. I think it's unfortunate for sure. I think it's very, I don't know what word I would use to describe it. I guess I'll just go with unfortunate. It's very unfortunate that we are at this time where those on the left are so out of control that this is how they're deciding that they're going to do business. That they are so out of control and that they are so wrapped up in fear and anger and outrage that this is how they're conducting themselves. And it's probably obvious that this was obviously planned, at least in some element. I mean, there's no way that a U.S. senator walks into a room and just this thing magically unfolds in front of your eyes. This is a PR attempt, just like the Maxine Waters thing, just like the Congress members in New Jersey back last month. All of this stuff is planned. This is all an attempt to get in front of the media and to try and build sympathy for the Democrat cause. But the reality is, it's all backfiring. Because again, when you look at the issue of immigration, which all of this spawns around, all three of the situations I just brought to you all revolve around the issue of immigration. When you look at immigration and you look at the polling, you look at the approval and non-approval on the issue of immigration, Donald Trump's approach, Donald Trump's strategy is what the majority of the American people are saying they are in support of. Now, it's not 80%, sure, but it is over 50%. More people approve of what Donald Trump is doing as it relates to immigration than disapprove. That is an undeniable fact. You can look at a variety of different polls, and they all show you that same situation. They all lay out that picture very clearly. So I'm not sure what the left is trying to do here. I'm genuinely confused with the approach that they are taking and what their objective and what their goal is. Because this is not it. You are not winning broad support of the United States. You are not winning broad support of middle-of-the-road, unaffiliated voters by acting in this manner. You're just not. If you were, the polling would have at least already started to swing to your direction, but it hasn't. And it's not going to. Because the American people understand the disaster that was created by this last administration. The American people understand the risks that continued illegal immigration causes for the United States. They are against the policies of the previous administration. They are. It's why Donald Trump, one of the large reasons why Donald Trump won. And so you can ignore the issue. You can bury your head in the sand. You can go la, 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 la and try and drown out all of the outside noise. That's fine. But the practicality of the situation is one that is not hard to understand, especially for individuals that are in high enough levels of office that they understand how the game is played, right? Politics is a game. It's a sport. These guys know better. They know how this game works. They're not stupid. They might pretend, they might act stupid. And they may do stupid things like Alex Padilla trying to cut off Kristi Noem in the middle of a press conference. That's a stupid thing to do. But I don't think the senator is stupid. I don't think he's oblivious to what's going on. And so I always like to try and understand, okay, what is the, you know, what's the next step from this? Where do we go three moves from here? And genuinely, I don't know where it is right now with the left. Immigration is an issue that they are losing on. It's something that they have lost on, and it's something that they continue to lose on. And so I'm genuinely trying to understand where they go from here. How do they try? How do they flip this narrative from something that is very negative to something that's positive without drastically changing their approach, right? Because it seems to me that they've got their heels pretty buried in on this issue. They're not going to do a 180 on their stance and thoughts on immigration. The likelihood of that happening, I see, is very low. I don't suspect that that's going to be the case. So the question is, how do you reframe the issue? How do you shift the conversation somewhere else on immigration so that you become the side that has the favorable opinion or the favorable thoughts or the favorable policies? I don't know how the left does it with this, but it's the same issue like men and women sports. They're on the losing side of an 80-20 issue, which they seem to be great at doing. They're on the losing side of all of these major discussions that are taking place across the across America this morning. And I don't know where the end game is here. I don't know what the plan is, how they begin to try and spin this in a negative manner. They've tried to claim for over a week now that President Donald Trump is out of control with his sending of the National Guard to two federal buildings in Los Angeles. That, I don't think, has really played well. You had a decision yesterday from a court saying that Trump needed to pull the troops out, that they needed the National Guard needed to be returned to the state of California's control. Then you had the appeals court last night, very late last night, rule that he can in fact continue to use the National Guard in cities like Los Angeles to protect federal installations and federal buildings. They're just losing all over the board. This whole thing seems to be incredibly short-sighted. And, you know, there, as it stands right now, Democrats are looking down a very, very tough midterm election. They are staring down the barrel of a very tough situation as it relates to the 2026 midterms. Now, it shouldn't be that way, right? Because we know that the party that is in the majority, which is right now the Republicans, always has a tough time in midterms. And when the Democrats are in power, they have tough times in midterms too. That is statistically, that is historically the way that this unfolds. That's nothing new. I'm not telling you anything that is, I'm not breaking any news to you this morning. That's how this situation unfolds. And so the Democrats should have a relatively easy position to take and a relatively easy election cycle as we approach March, of course, of next year when the primaries and then the general election, the general midterm election in November. They should be able to, just based on math and history, be able to secure at least victory in one of the two chambers, if not both. That's what they should be moving towards. But instead, what are they doing? They're trying to storm the podium of the of Secretary Kristi Noem. They're trying to force their way into ICE facilities and being arrested by FBI and Secret Service members. They're the ones that are going on cable news outlets and talking about how, you know, everything is peaceful out in the city of Los Angeles. Meanwhile, cars are burning in the middle of the roads. Buildings and businesses are being looted and ransacked. What the hell are these guys doing? What of this is the winning issue that you're going to convince Americans, hey guys, we're the party with the best platform. Hey, American voter, we've got the ideas that win. Disregard the burning car in the background. Disregard the burning city skyline because of immigration. Don't look at that. Ignore that issue. We're the Democrat Party. We have the issues. We have the ideas that win. I mean, it's insane. It's absolutely nuts. But they just continue. They continue to push this forward. And I don't see an end game for them at all. I know it's kind of a long discussion to loop it back, but I don't see it. This party is lost. But you had David Hogg just voted out as the vice chair of the Democrat Party over the weekend. So now they're without a vice chair. He's now waging war against the Democrat Party. It's a disaster. I've mentioned this for years, that I genuinely believed that the Democrat Party was going to go through, the best analogy I can draw, some sort of civil war internally. And it's because they have given so much airtime. They have given so much credit to these fringe groups on the left that do not speak. And let me be clear with this. These fringe groups do not speak for the mainstream Democrat Party. These fringe groups are not what the vast majority of Democrats believe. But for years now, in an attempt to, I guess, continue to hold their coalition together, they have given so much emphasis to these fringe groups. Whether we're talking about groups like BLM, whether we're talking about these immigration activists, the individuals that are on the side of Hamas and Iran and the Gaza Strip, whether we're talking about all of these other fringe groups on the left, they have given so much credit to these groups that it has disenfranchised the vast majority of the Democrat voting bloc. And these groups now feeling empowered, which is a realistic thing to believe when you're given all of this airtime, when you're given all of this credit, these groups now feel that they're empowered to run the show. And that's exactly what they're attempting to do. And with that, you've got this war that's brewing out within just one party. I mean, Republicans, we're used to this, right? We're phenomenal at shooting ourselves in the foot and stabbing ourselves in the back. We do it so well on the GOP, constantly. And now you're seeing it unfold on the Democrat side of the aisle. And there's really, what it comes down to is there's no leader. There's no voice. Right? Think about right now, who is the leader of the Democrat Party? Who is the guy or gal that comes forward, speaks out, and expresses things that the vast majority of Democrats believe? It doesn't exist. You don't have a leader of that party. You've got individuals that are in positions of power, sure. You've got people like Mitch McConnell, You've got people like Chuck Schumer. You've got people like Hakeem Jeffries. You've got other people like Gavin Newsom and other high-ranking Democrat officials that can do some, can lead some narrative, that can lead some level of discussion. But there's not one guy or gal that everybody is kind of looking up to for direction. Right? When Obama was in office, he was the leader of the Democrat Party. He set the narrative. He got all the troops in line. He was very, very good at keeping his party together. Very, very good. And then when you had Joe Biden in office, well, you started to see that erode because of a variety of issues that Joe Biden was facing. He was unable to essentially command leadership within the Democrat Party, whether that was his mental acuity issues that we know he dealt with through the vast majority of his 4 years as president. Whether it was some of the infighting going on within the party as they tried to figure out whether they were going to stick with Joe Biden or try and punt to somebody else to run in 2024, the whole thing just kind of crumbled. The machine, in a lot of aspects, kind of disintegrated. And now it's a party that's trying to rebuild, and you've got all of these different factions all trying to seize power. All of these different groups trying to prove that they are the group that is capable and is ready to lead the Democrat Party. And the end result is it's been an unmitigated freaking disaster for the left. It is a party that has no control. It is a party that has no strong voice at the top for leadership. And the end result is all of these various things going on at the same time and nobody to lead the narrative. And that's why I strongly believe that Democrats continue to lose this all of these issues, because there's no champion of it to reframe the issue. There's nobody that is the de facto voice to say, this is what we're going to do next, or this is how we're going to pivot from here. The narrative is not being built. And so when folks load up their social media accounts, they go on Instagram, they go on Facebook, they go on X, and they see burning cars on the side of the road, they go, huh. And then they watch Gavin Newsom talk about how this is not actually happening. They listen to the mayor of Los Angeles say that, oh, what you're seeing is not actually happening, and everything is all peaceful. They're kind of beside themselves, because there really is just, you look at that, you can see the images yourself. It's not a surprise. You can watch what's going on. It's not a secret. And for whatever reason, this party is just losing the battle, losing the narrative on everything. And it's been a very, very interesting process to watch. And it's something that I do not believe is going to be resolved soon. And that could essentially mean that you've got the Democrat Party that is essentially lost as they head into the midterm elections. The Democrat Party, without having a strong and clear message, will not be successful. I can promise you that they will not have a strong midterm election showing. Just based on my thoughts, they will not have a strong midterm election showing if they are unable to get this stuff under control. If they are unable to express to the American people what they're doing, what they want to do, and how they're going to be better than the opposition. And that's really the issue that they face. Can they be better than the opposition? As it stands right now, the answer is no, because their ideas are not popular. As it stands right now, the answer is absolutely not. The things that they are using as their high-ticket, high-profile items are very unpopular. And so I have no idea where we go from here. I really don't. I am glad that I am not currently a member of the Democrat Party, because it would be a really rough situation to deal with. You talk about a party that is incredibly fractured. You talk about a party that is struggling big time to gain any sort of political victories or any sort of political wins. That's what's happening with the Democrat Party right now. So that's going to do it for a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. You can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. That's 910-251-6088. Coming up Monday morning, we will do a full recap on a very successful budget meeting here in New Hanover County yesterday. There has been a budget that has been approved. We'll dive into those details coming up Monday morning. Have a great weekend. We'll be back with you Monday right here on the Nick Craig Show.